marvellous. And now, as ever, at 8:02, here in Lincoln, England, it's time for Gabriella Peralta with the weather from Gibraltar.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln is highs of 12 degrees centigrade, lows of 7 degrees centigrade. After a cloudy start, it will gradually clear towards a fresh afternoon with sunny spells.
I love the way you're actually about to say the weather for England. I mean, I'm sure it'll happen, Gabriella.
Yeah,
you know, so for
England.
Yeah, from Lincoln to England, then Great Britain, and then Europe, and then the world.
Yeah.
It will happen.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And will doubtless happen again, which is great stuff. All right, where do we go? You don't get flu in Gibraltar, because I can't imagine that a citizenry who are actually so healthy and dynamic as the Gibraltarians actually are would ever actually go down with the sniffles. You would laugh in the and scoff in the face of any flu bugs whatsoever. Is that a fair comment?
No.
Oh, all right,
we obviously get the flu. Just like everyone else.
Oh, well, you know, well, we're speaking to Leila Hanbeck later on in the programme today, Chief Pharmacist of the National Pharmacy Association, and it's about research that suggests nearly 40% of British folk think having the flu vaccine actually gives you flu. Do you believe that, Gabriella, or is it a case of, no, I know that getting the flu vaccine doesn't actually give you flu?
Doesn't the flu vaccine contain a little bit of flu inside? I don't know.
Well, you see, this is millions of people.
That's how you get vaccinated, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is the interesting thing which we will chase up with, because millions of people apparently think wrongly that a flu vaccination can give you flu. The research by the National Pharmacy Association reveals that nearly 39% of people mistakenly thought that getting a flu jab would actually make them ill. 1 in 10 people also believe that going out in the cold with wet hair makes you sick. And a similar number thought that the best course of action for coughs and colds is to take antibiotics. No. Indeed, the other myth is that the larger the pill, the stronger the medicine.
Okay.
I mean, you know, does this resonate, or is it a case of, oh, this is why...
I can imagine the cold hair one, definitely. Mm. I think a lot of people would think that you go out with cold hair, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced by the...
I don't think it does anything, but...
And certainly, as I say, wet hair, going out in the cold, it can't be good for you. It can't be good for you. And it's, that might be something we'll be working our way through in that process. But I just want to sort of work our way through that before, of course, we find out what the state of play is with Frodo and the state of being of our favourite Gibraltarian pug.
Frodo's just got back from his walk with my dad, so he's just run into the house.
He's run into the house.
Yeah, he ran into the house.
Is he seeking food? I mean, it's the autumn. Does he not realise?
He must have felt very energised for once. He's now sat back lying down again.
Well, obviously,
it lasted for 4 or 5 seconds.
All that effort.
But,
yeah, all that effort of running to the house is just quite unbelievable. Coming up very shortly, as I say, we'll be having the Lincoln Food and Gift Fair. We talked about, obviously, the Magic Festival. Has that happened in Gibraltar? Because I must admit, I think we talked about it, and then we seems to have... Oh, is it still there? Because last week, of course, we were discussing the Mentalist that you were experiencing.
No, the Magic Festival is not until the week of the 22nd.
Ah,
26th, I think it was.
So there's
still got a couple of weeks left. I've got my ticket, though.
Good.
So I'm really excited to be going.
Well, yeah, you really should be going in your capacity as official Gibraltarian correspondent for Siren Radio.
Yeah, I am. I'm going for work.
Yeah, that's the classic line from that. So that's good. Do you have things like Christmas markets in Gibraltar? Does that kind of open up? Because clearly we're not too far away from the Birmingham Christmas market, from the Lincoln Christmas market, from loads of Christmas markets in Germany. In fact, is there such a thing as a German Christmas market in Gibraltar?
No, there isn't. We don't have a Christmas market as such. I don't know. It's just never been done. I don't know if there's
a
space.
This could be the time, Gabriella, at 8:07 on a Thursday morning, where actually you may well turn around and say, it's time for me to actually open up the opportunities for a genuine German Christmas market in Gibraltar. It could be GG's.
Okay.
Germany in Gibraltar. Gigi. Yeah, as in Germany in Gibraltar, or Gig, perhaps. Although that might bring back notions of kind of other sort of German marches into various other countries, so perhaps we'll have to rebrand it into a more user-friendly sort of moment. But I think, you know, it could be a way forward. Just put it out there. You know. See if the Magic Festival can work its way through. And anything else that you've got lined up today as a reporter for the Gibraltar Chronicle, apart from a shameless plug for the Gibraltar Chronicle, which presumably people in Lincoln, England, can actually subscribe to if they wish?
Yes, they can, I think.
Good.
I think he'll subscribe for anywhere. I'm back in court today. So there's a long hearing of an inheritance kind of spat, you know. Who will take the inheritance? Will it be liquidators or the brother?
Sure.
So
this could be a whole series of dynasty. You know, it's who gets the. Why can't we all get along? I mean, at the end of the day, at the end of the life, it's simply a case of, you know, you can't take it with you. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, that's all I think. Frodo, we now presume, has actually settled down to rest for the day after his exertion with Mr. Is it Mr. Peralta or Senior Peralta? I mean, which is the official title that we should have actually...
I prefer Mr.
Yeah.
Just because... He's from Gibraltar, so I would say Mister.
So yes, yeah. Start something Senior Gibraltar, you might think it's a short step to actually going down the Catalonian route, which we don't want to talk about, really.
Yeah.
It's a dreadful thing from that perspective. So Gabriella, before we actually move into the next sequence, which will be Richard Fitzwilliams chatting about a variety of other bits and pieces, and we've got to squeeze in, and I mentioned William Coles and Ian Lennox before 9 o'clock. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
I have, thank you. Yeah.
Excellent. So can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Yeah, next week.
Exactly. And so it goes. Holly Johnston, Atomic City. Chris Dowes is stuck in traffic on the A15. If you're listening on the A15 and you're stuck in traffic, relax, unwind. It's time for Richard Fitzwilliams and another brace of dynamic movie reviews which will help entertain you through the whole sequence. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, I sincerely hope so. I do indeed. And a couple of interesting movies, to put it mildly.
Well, indeed. I mean, and I'm just sort of thinking, do we go with how anybody could consider producing a better version than the Albert Finney classic of the 1970s, of the wonderful Miss Christie's classic Oriental Express scenario? I really do not know. But Kenneth Branagh has certainly said he will seize that baton and introduce a whole new world, including Johnny Depp. And don't we just love the way he segues into his Pirates of the Caribbean persona, or indeed Edward Scissorhands, almost, it would seem, at the drop of a hat?
Yes, I have to say that if one was looking for someone evil, I think the part was played by Martin Balsam in 1774, who I thought was much more convincing, because in real life, monsters don't always look as evil as Johnny Depp does in this movie. I do have to say, regarding the 1974 version, what for me was better, certainly as far as Poirot is concerned, because I've never been a great admirer of Albert Finney's Poirot. I thought he was too much an animated waxwork. I did love Pete Ustinov, and I thought, for me, David Suchet and the Orient Express on television was, in fact, the best. But what the Sidney Lumet movie actually showed was how to use a star cast. You actually use them, and they are defined characters. I remember Wendy Hillier's Countess Dragomirov and Lauren Bacall, John Gielgud's son. And these were characters that you could still remember. And I mean, it's a long time ago, and one of the aspects of this, it's hard to treat it terribly seriously. That is, Branagh is grandstanding. It's not just the extraordinary moustache and goatee, it's also the fact that you don't really see enough of almost all of the star cast. I mean, if you rattle off the names, you simply begin...
You've got your Daisy Ridley, you got your Hadley Frasers, you got your Richard Cliffords, you got your Derek Jacobies, you got your...
Michelle Pfeiffer, who actually does rather well. too much rattling away about... Defoe's accent is bogus, because he tries to pretend he's Austrian to begin with. Penelope Cruz talks nonsense about being a missionary or some such. It's hard to make out. The point is, what I think Branagh could have done, and by the way, this I was certainly entertained by it, but I do think that you could have the movie a little longer if you like, but one of the aspects of it he really, really might have borne in mind is that it isn't just a movie about Poirot. It's an exciting story. It's with the murder of Roger Ackroyd, I think Agatha Christie's best, and I have to say, Branagh, from time to time, I mean, I think he's one of the most fascinating actors and directors. If one thinks back to 1989, I mean, my Monarchy on Screen Talk, of course, features his Henry V. Olivier chose Henry V as his first adaptation of Shakespeare, so did Branagh. Branagh is always up for it, and I think that's the attitude we need from someone who was once considered Britain's Wonder Boy. But
there were people who spoke of Branagh in the same breath as Olivier.
There certainly were, including Branagh. Mm. That was the point of firstly the Henry V, then Much Ado About Nothing.
Precisely.
Yeah, and why not? And you need a Renaissance man, and Branagh has done pretty well with an extraordinary mix of work on stage, screen, and so forth. I mean, this is a very handsomely mounted movie, wonderfully. The visuals are superb. It's pretty pacey and slick. I mean, it is a very skillful story. We meet Poirot. One character in the movie says, "You are funny looking, Monsieur Poirot." And I mean, there's no doubt. I wondered from the beginning, and this sinks the entire movie, you really must have Poirot as Suchet and Ustinov succeed in doing, as somebody who looks convincing. Agatha Christie's fastidious character, I'm all for any interpretation of whatever novel, because it's a question of whether it works. And actually, Branagh manages, despite the amazing facial hair, for most of the time to pull it off. But I did it a mercurial figure. But I did find it periodically rather distracting. On the other hand, the answer as to why it's remade, Branagh wanted to play the role, and there is a tremendous amount of grandstanding. There are too many guns being either fired or pointed around. You shouldn't have had the famous... in fact, it isn't fully explained as to why the clues lead to where they did, but very, very unnecessary for Branagh and the manager of the Orient Express to be armed whilst he's giving his exposition at the end, not to mention the cold since they're outside the train, that's fair.
But Richard, you've got to appeal to the American audience somehow along the way, and what better way than to actually use flagrant usage of firearms? You know, I just put that in there as a possibility.
It's also a possibility, mon ami, that I thought was a very strange one, but then it's a strange movie. I mean,
it's a strange world. It's murder on the Orient Express.
It is, and I mean, it's quite interesting. Branagh playing a Poirot whose lost love, Catherine, is constantly in his mind. He keeps, obviously, the photograph by her. And I mean, this is a character, if there are documents being burnt, it's not a question of Hercule Poirot somehow moving in a strange way. He may still want his eggs cooked to the 4-minute precision, but the facts are he can certainly move. I was almost convinced at one stage, given the fact the way he uses his stick and also the way he moves and his physicality, that he was a man of action who was going to audition for an older form of role. You know, James Bond isn't possible.
Well, you never know. I mean, a more chronologically gifted Bond is a possibility. Richard, I think the answer is far simpler than the sort of areas you've been alluding to there. In the word of Mark Mothersbaugh, weird things happen. Kenneth Branagh also directed Thor, the opening in the tremendous trilogy of movies, which, of course, has culminated in a wonderful direction by, I believe, a New Zealander called Thor Ragnarok. Natasha Armstrong is probably listening keenly.
He's actually Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi.
Oh, yes. No, that is true, and Branagh did. In fact, it's a tribute to this the amazing versatility of Branagh. But overall, just to sum up Orient Express, I thoroughly enjoyed it, really. I mean, I think a lot of people will, because it's great fun, it's a great story, and why not have a new interpretation of it? You must, after all. But I did feel that I would have loved a longer movie if we'd allowed Branagh had allowed his supporting cast. Michelle Pfeiffer does make a real effort, and that some of that manages to get across. But you want to see a bit more of them. And yes, if you're going to take a risk, and he did take risks, why not? Some come off and some don't. He upstages everybody with a certain panache, which is better some of the time than others. Uneven for me, I mean.
It's 114 minutes, and let's face it, it's still not going to match the joys of Paddington 2, but that's for another time, another place.
It is indeed.
As I mentioned, Natasha Armstrong will hopefully be joining us in the next part of the programme, but weird things happen, what heroes do. We've been waiting for this for quite some time in the Shakespearean way and word of, I think, the 17th Marvel Comics, Walt Disney Marvel Comics epic scenario that the gods have brought to us.
The gods have certainly been kind when it comes to Thor Ragnarok, because the decision to treat it as a comedy, but a comedy which was, there are so many homages to Star Wars, to Gladiator, and so on. I mean, what works here is the fact, and I happened to see this being in France, I missed a couple of previews as well, with a live audience, and it does make a difference, because what it underlines is that a movie with humor like this, with characters like this who the audience can relate, and with a lot of fun, you could feel it communicating itself to those around you, and it's important to see that film can do that, especially since you get a nearly packed audience and it's straight away into its run.
you've got Jeff Goldblum, you've got Kate Blanchett, you've got Mark Ruffalo, of course, as the Hulk.
Well, yes, and Kate Blanchett, interesting, she can be a particularly venomous...
It's the headgear she wears.
The headgear is most important. I mean, just to very briefly...
If Priti Patel was wearing headgear like that, then Theresa May would not have dared mess with her. That's all I should say.
Certainly you wouldn't mess with Hela, because, well, Hela being Thor, played by Chris Hemsworth, is imprisoned.
Your favourite actor of all time, I know, secretly. You made you a Chris Hemsworth fan, and he's... I mean, it's so much wondrousness.
He can be absolutely terrible, but this is a totally different... the film to some of the ones where he's been, shall we say, not the subtlest of performers, imprisoned by the fire demon Surtur, who tells him his father, Odin, played by Anthony Hopkins, good turn there, is no longer on Asgard. He predicts the realm will soon be destroyed in Ragnarok when Surtur attacks. So he returns, Thor returns to Asgard, finds Loki, played, of course, by Tom Hiddleston, and then they locate their father, who says that he is dying, which his death allows his firstborn, Hela, played by Kate Blanchett, to escape from prison. She conquered the Nine Realms with Odin. Some really nice flashbacks of attacks and battles and so forth here, but had been imprisoned when she became evil, but she's now released and faces both Thor and Loki, arrives in Asgard, resurrects the dead who had fought with her, and rules as a symbol of evil. So what to do? Whilst Thor crash lands on Sarka, captured by a bounty hunter, and serves as a gladiator for the Grandmaster, and...
I know him! He's my friend! We work together. We're colleagues at work. Sorry, just echoing.
You missed the Hulk, though. Yeah, that's exactly. Trouble. And in the arena, it's a tough call.
It's marvellous. Again, just awesomeness personified. But will it actually exceed the joys of Justice League of America, or indeed Justice League, because it's just Justice League, not to offend any kind of non-American folk who might sort of be confused if they say Justice League of America, just Justice League. What can I say, Richard? Between
it's colourful, and it's also the spectacular sets. I mean, I don't think that this type of movie will ever get away from the climactic good versus evil clashes of which do tend to go on for rather a long time. But the point is, it's part and parcel of something that these sci-fi type movies, Marvel have more or less perfected them. But what's important, I think, is that they are looking to pastures new, the fact that you can actually laugh and you're intended to laugh and you've got dialogue that's funny.
Well, personally, Richard, I also have availed myself recently of seeing a 1962 classic, which is, quite frankly, I've been amazed you never actually incorporated this when you talked about Lawrence of Arabia and so on. It was brought to my attention by actually just surfing around, basically, directed by J. Lee Thompson, starring Yul Brynner and Tony Curtis, of course, Taraz Bulba.
Good Lord, I certainly wouldn't call it a classic, but I had a lot of fun. And I seem to recall Yul Brynner pointing a gun at Tony Curtis.
My son, I gave you life.
It is for me to take it.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of battles, so spectacular.
Zaprezhny. It's the sort of thing which Thor Ragnarok also kind of benefits from. But
Thor Ragnarok, you haven't asked me yet about the sexuality of its character. I'm rather surprised because together with Loki and Thor and others who are rebelling against the evil Hela, we have 1-4-2. We have Tessa Thompson as an undoubtedly bisexual character.
A Valkyrie.
Absolutely, and she certainly packs a punch. I have to say I was very impressed with the Thor Ragnarok aerial battles. Because these give me great pleasure in the Star Wars movies, and there's no question that they pretty well perfected. They're really spectacular scenes here. So it's a really impressive movie, but I think we ought to give Tessa Thompson a nod. And I do think it's important also in days when LGBT characters, they're appearing in Disney, as they should, and it's taking a long time, but I think it's time for an LGBT superhero, don't you?
Well, Miss Marvel, of course, is one of the key folk within that whole field, and indeed it has been stated there will be an all-female team of superheroes that Kevin Feige, I believe, from Marvel Studios has said, yes, it will happen in the very near future. You've got your Black Widow, you've got your Miss Marvel, you've got your Captain Marvel, you've probably got your Valkyrie. It's all wonderful. I have seen Thor Ragnarok. I may well hopefully look to go and see Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, I didn't realize you hadn't seen it. You cleverly led me on whilst not revealing.
Spoilers, Richard, spoilers.
You tempted and teased me, and I sort of you assumed that you had. But yes, I mean, the point is it's fun, and I wouldn't rush to see it because have you seen Call Me By Your Name and God's Own Country?
Well, exactly. You see, these
are... there's so much more... on, frankly, because, you know, with Suchet...
So many things to do, and Paddington 2, of course. What's that to
which we're discussing very soon.
Yes,
next week.
We didn't even talk about Jeff Goldblum's appearance as the disco-collecting Lord of Sakaar, etc.
Oh, yes, the Lord of Sakaar, and based, obviously, as a nod here to the Hunger Games. No question. But all these, the different homages come off, I think.
Or was the Hunger Games a nod to the original graphic narrative and graphic novels that actually Thor Ragnarok is based on?
That is something that you would be able to tell.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there isn't time to discuss Prince Charles's financial situations. It's all right, Prince Charles. All's well.
I think anything offshore is absolutely toxic, and there's little doubt that both the Queen with the Duchy of Lancaster investments and Prince Charles with these investments made in 2007, which happened to give the impression to some certain newspapers that have an axe to grind, that his speeches, somebody who is perhaps the most consistent champion of action to be taken against climate change, that there shouldn't have been a clash. The facts are that, the Prince's first talk on pollution was 1970.
You see, we haven't had time to talk about it, so let's just park the bus there. And just give a reminder that Tony Curtis, Yul Brynner and Christine Kaufman, Taras Bulba, 1962, available on most channels. Give yourself a treat.
What prompted you to watch?
It was one of
the strangest movies you've ever flung at. remember it. No, I mean, it was very, very good fun. Tony Curtis, Christine Kaufman, good gracious, yes, it brings back a
In the 16th century Ukraine, the Polish overlords and the Cossacks fight for control of the land.
It wasn't subtle, but it was very good fun.
Precisely.
I remember all those cannons firing out of that fortress, and there were huge battles in front of
us. It's amazing. And like yourself, I think it was a case of nostalgia. I thought, I'm sure that at this moment, at one climax in this movie, Yul Brynner does utter those words, "My son, I gave you life." And yes, he does, and you confirmed it. No spoilers, but anyway, so it goes.
Oh, good Lord, of the film like Taras Bulba, to give a spoiler. I mean, it would be like spotting us all the night.
Exactly. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Richard?
You planned a whole way of tempting and teasing and then bring up Taras Bulba as well.
There you go. I take it you'll be back with us next week. Brilliant.
You will, Paddington 2.
Oh, the one missing aspect of Thor, it needed more Paddington.
There is always the possibility of collaboration. After all, I mean, we've had various characters joining the Marvel Universe. They keep doing it, and Paddington could be. Yes, what a thought.
can pretty much guarantee that if you bring out Grandmaster Jam Session, then Sally Monday will think, party time, and she'll be here. Yay, Sally, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Brilliant. Sally, of course, quick introduction, is the guru behind marketing at the Lincoln Event Centre. No. How would you define yourself today, Sally Monday?
My role is trade and sponsorship at the Lincolnshire Showground.
Well, guru behind trade and sponsorship at the Lincolnshire Showground. It's just a title, Sally. Important though it may well be. It's okay. Feel free to change to another set of headphones if you're not happy with those. Change to any particular set you wish. Meanwhile, I will chat merrily with Ian Lennox and say, good morning, Ian Lennox. How's life in Tyneside?
A bit dark and wet today, but all right.
Really? In November, it's dark and wet in Tyneside.
Well, yesterday it was sunny and bright.
Well, you see,
I went to the coast. Oh. So.
Well, in Lincoln, it's always bright.
You don't often go to the coast in Lincoln, do you?
Skegness. Yesterday we had Eva MacDonald, who actually spent the entire summer having knives thrown at her in Skegness.
Oh,
she's an entertainer. Before you say anything, Sally, it's not another expose here that we've been sending off. You know, and it was all going well before at the midweek.
Did you confess?
Yeah. It's fine, honestly. Well, she says it's fine. Sally, you're here today. Once again, it's always a delight to see you, but here we are approaching the official start of Christmas, which will be taking place first weekend in December.
Correct.
2nd and the 3rd of December. Last night, we had a dilemma. I'll be honest, a major dilemma that struck us with the midweek drive. In fact, we can actually sort of, if you check out the images on Facebook, you can see the kind of dilemma we were actually having with Professor Jason Whittaker and indeed Finn Pollard and aforementioned Ian MacDonald, who indeed was having knives thrown at him, not during the show, obviously. The dilemma was this, because Ian won't know because he doesn't listen on a Wednesday night. You know,
okay.
It's waking him up on a Thursday morning is all I can say. So, he's a consummate professional, I will say. But the problem is, same weekend in Manchester, David Hasselhoff, William Shatner and Dolph Lundgren in For the Love of Sci-Fi. Now, I said, obviously,
it's a no-brainer, Alex.
Exactly, clearly. You know, if you can't do both, you know, which some of us are going to try and
do the food and gift fair.
Exactly. There you go. So the message has come across, etc. You know, it has been pointed out. I mean, I don't know, Ian, if that has set your pulses a-racing. I mean, it's kind of the equivalent to John Tudor, Wyn Davies and Malcolm MacDonald being in the same room as a Newcastle United supporter. But, you know, such awesomeness. Captain Kirk, Knight Riders, Man with a Mission, and, of course, Baywatchers. Well, something else you can say about Baywatch, really. And Dolph Lundgren here versus, of course, the awesomeness of the Lincoln Food and Gift Fair.
Who won?
I won, surely.
Exactly.
Yes, you're last person standing, really.
It was a celebrity knockdown special in more ways than one, and we'll certainly share that with William Coles later on in the day. Anyway, Ian, would you like to put that lovely question to Sally, which enables her to talk at length about the food and gift fair and how, I traditionally say, you forget other Christmas markets, they are available. I believe there's one in Birmingham that's taking place, actually, which we're looking to cover.
Where?
It's a German Christmas market. And, of course, there's Lincoln's very own Christmas market. But there is this food and gift fair. Ian, please, the interviewing reins are now passed firmly to your good self.
Oh, dear. Because I haven't a clue what you've been talking about.
We've just started, Ian. You know, you've been brought in at the top here. Simply put the question. You know, we're working on that basic journalistic thing. You wouldn't believe you used to be a journalist, would you? I mean,
shall I just talk?
Who, where,
yes.
What, when,
please.
Shall I just tell you about the food and gift fair?
John Wannam would be marching into the studio otherwise and saying, for goodness sake, just tell them about it.
So, the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair, held annually at the Lincolnshire Showground this year, Saturday the 2nd, Sunday the 3rd of December. 150 trade stands celebrating everything that's great about food in Lincolnshire and unique gifts, handcrafted, that sort of thing. Santa's workshops with lots of hands-on activities for the children. Lincolnshire Kitchen promoting local food producers and restaurant chefs sharing their top tips for Christmas. engaging with local community choirs who will be entertaining us over the course of the weekend.
It's just awesome.
Christmas under one roof.
You could almost say, in the words of the Vietnam soldiers, it's a snafu. Situation normal, all fudged up.
Boom, boom!
Exactly! You've got locally sourced food, you've got gifts, you've got cookery demonstrations. I can't believe it's in its 17th year, Sally.
Yeah, unbelievable, really. And I can't believe it's the year since I was sitting here promoting it last year. But, 17th year, and it just grows and grows, really.
How long does it last for?
It's over 2 days, so Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day.
And how many visitors do you expect?
Last year we had about 8,500 over the course of the weekend. So,
wow.
Yeah, so it's...
Is it a big site you're on? You said 150, is it?
A 200-acre site, yeah, just north of Lincoln. So it's a permanent showground. So
it's easy to get to as well?
It's easy to get to, ample free parking. It's all inside, so it spans two large buildings that we have, and then we link the two buildings with a...
Oh, right. 200 acres inside is a big...
Yeah.
Yeah. A few football pitches.
Yes.
And the other thing is, of course, you get to see the fabulous team from the Lincolnshire Events set-up, of course, led by Jane Southall, with Sally, Rachel, and others dressed in their finery, because you don't have to worry about getting wet.
No, absolutely. And, we're a relatively small team, but we're a team that, you know, all come together to work on our own events. And
it's like a team of angels. If you were looking at sort of the angels and Captain Scarlet, sort of ace fighter pilots who kind of add their sort of skills to marketing and promoting the best of Lincolnshire, you're pretty much, I mean, that's I've always seen Jane Southall basically as Destiny Angel and yourself kind of melody or harmony, actually.
Thanks, Alex.
Rhapsody or Symphony, you can identify those by yourselves in terms of who they would actually work through. Just celebrating the 50th anniversary of Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons there, Ian, in case you're wondering. Where's he going with this? Why isn't he just talking about how well Manchester City are doing and how Newcastle just lost another game? It's all right. I'm just, you know, full of positivity. We've got to work through this. Exactly.
Thank you very much.
I'm just nudging it in there. One day, I'm sure, Sally, we will see Ian in Lincoln.
I hope so.
Oh. Not that you could insult the Castle United, you won't, I tell you.
I haven't insulted them, though, have I?
Exactly. too kind and sort of positive about the whole thing. We'll find out more about how you can get tickets for this awesome event on Saturday the 2nd and Sunday the 3rd of December. We'll be talking with William Coles up in Edinburgh in a matter of moments. Ian Lennox, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Yes, it's been educational.
Oh, I would like to feel that we do have, you know, positive lines from that point of view.
I didn't know anything about
the Lincolnshire Food Gift Fair.
Yeah.
I forget so easily. It was on the same show last year. You know, it's bless his heart. You know, it's all right. We always know there's a place for Ian Lennox in the world. And even if it's only the sort of classic sort of curmudgeonly uncle that we actually have from Tyneside, who nobody can understand because he speaks some strange version of the English language.
You make me sound like the male version of Giles's granny.
There we are. I mean, you think you've encapsulated that positively. And so one day it'll be just wondrous. So I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephone conversation, which you've already answered. Have you decided that it's good enough to come back next week?
Yeah, of course.
We'll probably see the return of Midweek Drive out, so as currently they're all over the place doing a variety of other sort of bits and pieces. Or, in the case of Chris Stowers, stuck on the A15. Well, you know, it happens.
Sure how it goes. John at the bar is a friend of mine. He gets me my drinks for free. And he's quick with a joke or to light up your smoke. But there's some place that he'd rather be. He says, Bill, I believe this is killing me. As a smile ran away from his face. But I'm sure that I could be a movie star. If I could get out of this place, oh la 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 di di da, la la di di da da da. Now Paul is a real estate novelist who never had time for a wife, and he's talking with David, who's still in the Navy. And probably will be for life.
Music that could only be bettered by the choirs at the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair, I'd say, Sally Monday.
Of course.
Now, Ian Lennox, clearly, you know, Newcastle to Lincolnshire, it's not going to happen. But world trotter and traveller and general guru of goodness and romantic fiction, William Coles, will clearly say, I'm going to come down from Edinburgh and I'm going to see this Food and Gift Fair. Isn't that right, William Coles?
I'm going to eat my way through it. Yes, Alex.
Exactly. You see, that's the can-do attitude of the Kohlmeister. You know, he's
excellent.
There, sorted through, Thursday morning, set and ready to go. I suspect William hasn't been listening online, and, you know, clearly people have this sort of notion, so repetition being the key to success in so many ways. Let's talk a bit more, Sally, about the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair at the showground. It does need to get better each year. Looking at the Lincolnshire kitchen, looking at the exhibitors that you've actually got within that, Santa's Workshop is there, so good for William's children.
Absolutely. Santa's Workshop's great. Some of the initiative we introduced last year, and it's getting better and better. So all the activities are free for children. There's storytelling. There is a reindeer food bar. They can create their own pizzas and then take them home and cook them at home. They can make snowman biscuits. They can make Christmas decorations. They can make Christmas cards, just, something for everyone, and all those activities are free of charge.
Exhibitors, too many to list, over 150, but yeah. Just highlights, artisan teas and coffee, beers for brownie, well, of course, Blueberry Hill Preserves, Dotty Birds, Enchanted Earth, Flint and Flame, Fudged Up, my favourite, as I say, Snafu, yeah. Situation Normal, all fudged up. Heartland Pies, Hot Rocks, JT Enterprises, Lincolnshire Poacher Cheese, Lincolnshire Wildlife Trust. William, it's question time for me, so I mean, I can almost hear the taste buds watering and the salivary glands producing their amylase and saying, yes, this is what we need.
Okay. Apart from, what do we think about Santa before December, by the way?
Not before December, but we are in December with our Food and Gift Fair, so I think we're all right.
Oh, right, it isn't now, it's in a month's time.
No, it's on the 2nd and 3rd of December.
Look, we may...
All right,
we
then.
May...
You just made it.
We may well have been in a situation where yesterday Tony Hall was celebrating 50 years of BBC local radio, but we, unlike BBC, we actually like to tease ahead, give people time to plan. We don't
okay,
just sort of do it
sorry.
On the day.
Yes. Okay, so what's the top three foods that I should be looking out for specific to Lincolnshire?
Lincolnshire plum bread, Lincolnshire sausages, and Lincolnshire cheeses.
Right, okay. Plum bread. I've never had that one before. Do you have that with tea?
Yes, and traditionally, well, a lot of people have it with cheese as well, a slice of plum bread with cheese. So lots of our local bakeries have their own old family recipes, secret recipes for plum bread, but it really is delicious.
And is there a competition as well for the sort of the best food there?
There isn't.
The queen. the queen of the show.
Yeah, there isn't actually, but maybe that's something that we should consider, because it encourages all the exhibitors as well. So, thank you for that.
Yeah, sponsored by Siren FM.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Alex will provide the cup.
Funnily
That's
enough,
great.
We will have a Siren Radio mug that will be there. I'm sure we can actually work through every other bits and pieces.
We're thinking more of a sort of silver trophy,
really?
Alex. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking, Cheapskate.
Yeah. I'll refer it upwards, okay? I'll refer it upwards, and I'm sure I'll pass it sideways. One of those two things will be done.
Look, yeah. Alex, they'll allow you to present the trophy, and if you're just giving them a mug, I mean, that's not much to hand over. But a trophy, the Siren FM trophy, and you'll have the winner blubbing away. It'll be very moving. It'll be great radio.
Again, I appreciate the thoughts, and as always, it's that interactivity that makes Siren Radio and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition just that little bit more special. I noticed Neil's Yard Organic Remedies are going to be there. Is that the Neil's Yard who specialise in cheese from Covent Garden?
It is. Yes.
Oh, very good, because we met up with them at the Burley Horse Trials this year when they were doing some great stuff there. And, yes, lots of, I mean, just outstanding. How can people actually get tickets for this fabulous event, sir?
Tickets are available through our website. £5 in advance for adults, and under 16s go free. £6 on the day, so they're available through our website. Or through our ticket outlets, so Uncle Henry's Farm Shop at Grangham and Pretty Little based in the Balegate.
No relation to Pretty Patel, in case you were wondering. Sorry.
No.
Quite clear there, but equally pretty. Or not, as the case may be. And in terms of actually accessing the site itself, LincolshireShowground.co.uk will presumably open up details on that.
Website, LincolshireShowground.co.uk, and obviously ample free car parking.
Sponsored by Pentagon, not the car parking.
The food and gift at the showground.
Yeah. So it was important to get the sponsors. Have we sold it to you, William? I mean, is this sort of something which, I fancy a 250-mile, or indeed 500-mile round trip to move from Edinburgh down to Lincoln for the first weekend.
Yeah, completely. But could you, how am I going to be able to sell it to a rather gnarly 15-year-old boy? I mean, he's going to say, I don't fancy that much. What's in it for me?
Tough call, Sal.
I mean, he's
gnarly. Yeah. Well, he could, I mean, presumably 15-year-old boy, big appetite, so he could eat his way around the food and gift fair without having to spend any money by sampling all the wonderful products that are there. He could, I don't know if he's interested in cooking, but he could sit and watch a cookery demonstration.
All the great chefs. Where's the next bake-off contestant going to come
from? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Stuff, yeah. That'd be quite a good challenge, wouldn't it? To see if he could sample every single freebie in the place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so we need a little board which he can tick off. Yes, I've got the free sausage. Yes, I've got the free cheese. Yes, I've had my free half pint of cider.
Absolutely. I can organise that board for you, no problem.
Exactly. So this is the magic. I had a sense, actually, that William was going to be cooking with gas, no pun intended. Electricity is obviously equally as good, or indeed sometimes just on the coals. But we knew that. That's why I thought it was important he joined us on the Thursday as opposed to his normal Wednesday slot. It's very, very important for that. I feel energised on that basis alone, William. And is life treating you well in Edinburgh?
Oh, yes. It's fantastic. We've got a ping pong net, and we put the net on any table going, including the kitchen table. And the children, I'm slightly better at ping pong than the children, and they've been complaining bitterly when I throw a game. Mm-hmm. What do we think about throwing games and letting children win?
Well, I mean, technically, the political correct notion is it's table tennis. Ping pong carries with it the notions of empire, which we don't really talk about now, and I don't want to get the tradition into any trouble from that point of view.
Well, would you rather it was called Whiff Waff?
Oh, nice. it's a thought. Sally, in terms of that caught between the horns of a cleft stick that William seems to be, do you throw the game to let the...
Of course you don't.
No, so basically it's competitive dad.
It's
really.
Competitive.
Always.
Yeah.
Right, so you just rub their noses in it. Okay, right.
Yeah, and they just try harder and harder and harder. Practice until they win.
Yeah, I know, but if they're beating 100 goes straight, I mean, they might get a bit dispirited.
Well, encourage you stop playing for a bit then and let them play against each other.
Right, yeah, they do a bit of that, yes.
There is, I mean, there is actually clear evidence, as Sally's just alluded to there, that the only way you improve your game is if you actually play against somebody who's slightly better, and that's a whole range of things for that. Tennis players often look to have somebody who's better than themselves, because otherwise you're just going to stay at the one level, you're never going to improve. You know, so it's always raising that bar, much like the University of Lincoln does. Anyway, seamless way, I just popped that in there.
Yeah.
It's always nice to actually have the home of Siren Radio put in place there.
It was effortless.
Well, in terms of a notion that we have addressed so far in the programme, what we'll be coming to after the news, do you think, William Coles, that having a flu jab actually gives you the flu?
I thought it gave you a little bit of the flu, didn't it?
Yeah.
And I suppose if you're a bit low, then it can actually give you the flu. But so you want to be taking the jab when you're heat one, resilient.
That might be well part of the urban myth that our chief pharmacist of the National Pharmacy Association, Leila Hanbeck, will be addressing in a matter of moments. The other line that I think is quite interesting, 1 in 10 people think that the bigger a person is, the more medicine they need. Yes,
yeah, well, don't they? What about my kid? I mean, my kid's half the size and he's only allowed half the anodin.
Okay, yeah. And what about going out in the cold with wet hair? It makes you sick.
Certainly can do that one, yeah. That is said to be an old wives' tale, but what happens is you've got all these bugs inside you, which you're keeping a lid on. But when you get cold, your resistance goes down, and suddenly the bugs, they're up and running, and yeah, we're going to get it.
After the news, the National Pharmacy Association will strike back at those myths that William believes to be true, with Leila Hanbeck addressing these issues in terms of how you should actually be working through this process. And interestingly enough, I'm sure, Sally, you'll have one or two thoughts on this one as well, in terms of, clearly Sally never gets the flu or any bugs because she's not allowed to. It's part of the job contract. Just work on through it. Too busy to catch cold is the motto.
Push on through.
Exactly. That's the classic line. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I love the morning slot. Yes, it's good.
Exactly. So will you be back with us Wednesday or Thursday next week? Will you return?
Just as soon as you ask me. Yes, thanks so much for having me.
And he may just join us for the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair, actually. I'll keep one of his press pages. Who knows? It depends
on
which eye, exactly.
You'd be very welcome, William.
He'll let us know, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Exactly. Like a royal visitor, really. You know, it's not, you know, William. And the weather today on Siren Radio for the Lincoln region. Highs of 12 degrees centigrade, lows of 7 degrees centigrade. After a cloudy start, it'll gradually clear towards a fresh afternoon with sunny spells. So good news there. Hopefully weather which won't make you prone to catching colds. Or will it? Or is that an urban myth? Or, as we've been talking about in the first part of the programme, are these all things which we've strangely allowed to percolate through our consciousness? To address this, we're delighted to speak now to the Chief Pharmacist for the National Pharmacy Association, Leila Hanbeck. How are you, Leila?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Good to hear that you're not suffering from the sniffles, because that would have been too ironic in so many ways. Anyway, let's talk us through this particular aspect. We've got Sally Mundy in the studio from the Lincolnshire Event Centre. And Sally, as we said, you're too busy to catch cold. So that's another line. It doesn't work on that. We have to work through this. But this research that's been put together, that 40% of British folk think that having the flu vaccine gives you flu. So far, our correspondents on the show said, well, surely that is how vaccinations work. Doesn't it give you just a small thing? Share with us, Leila, what's the truth behind this apparent sort of uncertainty?
Yeah, so a survey that we did at the National Pharmacy Association demonstrated that 40% of people actually feel that they will get the flu after flu jab. But viruses are killed and purified before being made into a vaccine, so there is no chance of getting a flu after having the flu jab. So it's a myth.
So that's a critical one. Okay, yeah. Myth number two in terms of the myth-busting scenario, which I think William Coles was particularly sort of concerned about, that surely if you give children smaller amounts, then, you know, the fact that 1 in 10 people think the bigger a person is, the more medicine they need. Where do you sit on that one, Leila?
Well, it's one of those things that, you know, again, people feel that, you know, just because they're bigger, they have to take more medicine. But it all comes down to the dosage that is required for them. And so, therefore, they have to really follow the guidance and speak to their pharmacist about it. Just because you're bigger or smaller doesn't mean that you have to take less or more of a medicine. And actually, it can be very harmful if you do that. So better to speak to the pharmacist and get advice before actually going in and making your own mind what you want to do.
Well, this is, of course, something which, again, we've been pushing very solidly over the last few months, actually, with various chemists and pharmacies up and down the length of the land. Sally, what did you think about the wet hair one? Because that was, again, one with showing you, you have wet hair, you go out in the cold, it's going to make you a bit ill.
Well, it can't be great to go out in the cold with wet hair, but I wouldn't say that it would necessarily cause an illness.
Layla, thoughts on that one?
Yeah, so again, people feel that if you go out with wet hair, you're most likely to get a cold. Now, there's some little merit in that, in that, obviously, if you're not keeping yourself warm and if you go out in the cold, and your immune system may be a little bit weaker in cold weather, so better to keep warm and dress up warm before you go out.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I say washing your hair and then going out of the cool, it's an interesting perspective. Maybe it's, yeah, because I mean, there are certain folk who obviously would say, I just go out barefoot in all weathers. Makes no difference to me whatsoever. I'm a Shaolin monk, but never mind. Okay, let's move on to this. Sally, any general questions from yourself about this whole work with the Pharmacy Association, sorting through the whole process, and indeed having our flu jabs? I mean, have you had yours? Or is
No, I've never had a flu jab, so never.
Well, actually, I have to echo that. I'm also in that camp. I haven't had a flu jab either. So, Layla, are we wrong? Are we sort of saying, well, this is insane. We're taking our lives in our hands. What would you recommend?
Well, over a million people have had a flu jab through community pharmacy. And this is part of the NHS vaccination program that certain groups are eligible for to receive it. For example, older people and pregnant women and people with certain long-term conditions, like, for example, asthma or diabetes, they can get vaccinated against the flu virus. And so people shouldn't let these myths stop them from getting the flu vaccines, particularly people who are in that group, to make sure that they keep safe over the winter.
Okay. Now, this is obviously part of Ask Your Pharmacist, which is very good from that point of view. In terms of that, have you found, you know, in your capacity as chief pharmacist, that people have actually said, no, I want to actually go to my doctor so he can actually, or she can actually, just write me a prescription for some antibiotics and that's it?
No. A lot of people have, again, that's another misconception, that if you go to the doctor and if you're suffering from some minor cold and coughs, that antibiotics would make it go away. Colds and coughs are caused by viruses, and so it's very important that you ask your pharmacist before you actually go to the doctor and ask for antibiotics. We also need to be careful about usage of antibiotics. So, again, ask the pharmacist, because the cold and cough may be a virus thing that doesn't go away with an antibiotic.
As a trained pharmacist, as somebody working in that point of view, it's worth stressing that it's not a case of somebody who wants to set up their shingle and turn around and say, yes, I'm now a qualified pharmacist. There are actually standards and lots of exams and medical things that you need to actually go through. So presumably people often don't realise how much medical expertise pharmacists actually have.
Yes, 5 years of education with regards to medicine. So that's a long time to be expert in medicine. So the pharmacists are very... they're on high streets, they're in local areas, and very accessible for people to go and ask any questions they have with regards to their medication and their health and well-being in general.
And are there any health topics which you'd actually turn around and say, no, I'm sorry, I just will not go there with respect to pharmacy? I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, the embarrassing body scenario where you think, oh, could you just have a look at this little scar?
No, most pharmacists have actually a consultation room in place. The vast majority of them have a consultation room in place where people can sit and talk in private about various different conditions and receive the treatment and the advice that they need. If there is something that the pharmacist feels that the patient needs to go and see the doctor, they will make the relevant referrals as well. So very accessible, there is a consultation room, and very private as well.
Well, ultimately, I think we're all in the whole notion of looking for quality of life, ensuring things are sorted through. I mean, Sally, has that kind of persuaded you to actually think, yes, I think I'll consider the pharmacist before heading off to the doctor, if I have time, of course.
I think we're all guilty of going to the doctor for the slightest thing, and we're probably underusing our pharmacies and our pharmacists, and maybe we all need to think about or rethink you know, if we're ill, going to the pharmacist first before immediately picking the phone up to get a doctor's appointment. Mm. And, you know, our GP's telling us that in some cases, appointments, people are going for appointments where actually they could have got the answer from our pharmacist. So if we all sort of re-educate the way we think, then we're actually going to free up doctor's appointments, which you certainly in Lincolnshire, when they're talking of closing the walk-in centre and everything like that, can only be a good thing. Mm.
Which is pretty much at the heart of this whole piece, Leila, I would have thought.
Yes, absolutely. It's just about asking your pharmacist. It's about trying to, you know, reduce the burden on the NHS and on the doctors. Because as you rightly said, many people are under the impression that, you know, for everything they need to have a doctor's appointment and go to see the doctor. But there are a lot of conditions that can be treated by just asking the pharmacist.
In terms of finding out further information, presumably npa.co.uk is the website that will take you to the National Pharmacy Association and give you details about the survey and so on.
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. Two final questions, Leila. I think we've asked you them before, but have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link yourself today? Has it been okay for you?
Yes, it has been, actually. It has been. Thank you for asking.
That's okay. It's our customer satisfaction survey. Constantly sort of looking for that scenario there. I take it then we'd be able to connect with you again, hopefully in the not-too-distant future, to give us a praise of the excellent work of the National Pharmacy Association. Would you be kind enough to return?
Thank you very much. Yes, I will be.
No high way free.
As we head through the second decade of the 21st century, clearly the rhetorical question that is often asked is, are paper coffee cups as bad for the environment as plastic bottles? With 7 million disposable paper coffee cups thrown away every day, but just 17,500 of those being recycled, clearly we seem to have an issue. So we're delighted to be able to take the opportunity now to welcome to the programme Frugal Pack founder and general all-round extraordinaire, a wonderful soul, Martin Meiserskopf. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well. How are you today?
Delighted to touch base with your good self and just talk to us a little bit about this challenging thing. I mean, one in five consumers actually believe that 50% of coffee cups are recycled. Actually, it's closer to 0.25%. And the United Kingdom is facing a challenge on an unprecedented scale with coffee outlets kind of multiplying like rabbits, one might say.
Absolutely true. Both facts true, yes. There's a gap between what the consumer thinks gets recycled and what actually gets recycled, and it's quite a big gap. And also, you know, the coffee chains have increased. There's a 31% increase in coffee chains over the last 5 years. So there's more outlets, more cups, more problems, and less recycling. So it's all around becoming a big issue.
So in terms of Frugal Pack, which clearly is the company that you founded, I mean, you've actually hopefully managed to find the killer application, the killer app that might actually work on this in the real world, a disposable coffee cup that's made from recycled cardboard.
Yes, well, what we did was we looked at all the talk around recycling, realised that we were never going to change the recycling system, so we'd have to change the cup. The reason existing cups don't get recycled is because they have a thin layer of plastic on the inside of them. And when they go to any normal paper mill, they don't break down in the general recycling process. And so we said, well, we're not going to change all the mills and we're not going to change all the collection systems, so let's change the cup. So we went back and redesigned the cup. Our cup is looks and tastes the same as a normal cup. It's just that when it goes to the paper mills, and they go to most mills, thin plastic lining that's inside it, which is thicker than the normal lining, floats free, and the cup carries on and gets the paper carries on and gets recycled, and the plastic gets caught in the filters. So yes, it is a universal solution.
One of the facts which certainly astounded me was that there are only two places in the United Kingdom that can actually recycle conventional paper cups. Not really a good strategy, really, given the amount of coffee that as a nation we consume.
I know, but we're using in excess of 2.5 billion cups a year. There's enough waste there to fill the Albert Hall. And, you know, there are 47 mills in the UK and only two of them are taking cups. So it's a collection problem. When the consumer walks out of the coffee shop, walks down the street, drinks a cup of coffee, where did they put it? If they put it in the recycling bin, it's not going to get to those mills. There's no mechanism for getting to those specific mills. So it's not a they are technically recyclable, existing cups. It's just they never get to the mills to be recycled.
Perhaps if Lennon and McCartney were writing Day in the Life today, they'd say, yeah, now we know how many paper cups it takes to fill the Albert Hall as opposed to holes in Blackpool.
Well, everybody uses the Albert Hall or Wales. No, that's the other one, isn't it? Everything's the size of Wales when you're looking for a reference.
It's a way forward. What about machines, Martin? Because clearly an awful lot of folk tend to get their coffee from machines and the cups are kind of automatically produced to you from that point of view. Can Frugal Pack obviously start equipping machines as well? Can we coordinate deals between manufacturers and areas within that as well?
Yeah, so there's standard cup-to-go machines. They're double-wall cups. Most of the industry these days is double-wall cups. So they have a sleeve on them, and that's for insulation, so you don't burn your hands, and they will come out of a normal sort of, you know, standard machine. Some of the vending machines, the very cheap ones, we can't supply their single-wall cups, so we do double-wall cups. We're working on some single-wall technology, but most people these days are on double-wall cups, yes.
And I presume that this applies for all hot drinks. So for those folk who actually say, I never take coffee, but I can't do without my hot chocolate or tea, the same thing applies.
It will work. It will work for tea as well. Yes.
This is good news, Martin.
Tea's actually harder to do because you can get a taint on tea. A lot of some other cups actually do taint tea. So, tea's actually harder to deal with than coffee.
Well, Martin, you clearly kind of raised the bar here, and we wish you all the very best in terms of that. But I can already hear people saying, well, that's all very well. We've talked about Frugal Pack. We've talked with the founder, Martin Meiserskopf. But how can people find out more? What's the best place to go to find out further details?
Go on our website, frugalpack.com, and you'll find out all about it.
Martin, it's been a genuine delight touching base with you this afternoon. We generally are aware that recycling is good. We don't want to end up in a world like Wall-E had to deal with, where you're sorting through all manner of bits and pieces. And this is something actually fundamentally that we can do something about in terms of the system. So it's not as though it's something which we have to shrug our shoulders at and say, oh, we can't possibly cope with that. Through a certain amount of judicious incorporation of Frugal Pack's product, then things will actually work out.
Absolutely.
So the next two critical questions, which we tend to recycle because we're that kind of radio station, basically. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Martin? Has it been okay for you?
It was very good. Thank you very much. That's a good response.
Well, the next critical question is, can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the very near future and keeping us appraised of Frugal Pack, etc.?
Yeah, well, we've got another product that's coming out probably in about 14 days' time, which is also another interesting area where people think they get recycled and don't. So we're on a bit of a roll here.
Martin, we look forward to speaking to you in the very near future. Take care now.
Thanks a lot.
It's worth noting, of course, that the Lincolnshire Showground is well into recycling, so it's all good. It's marvellous stuff. That's ecologically sound. It's great stuff, as indeed is the Lincoln Food and Gift Fair. How can people get hold of tickets? How can people go and find details, etc., to share with us before we go into our next little feature, which ironically is going to be about financial fraud? That's not going to happen at the Lincolnshire Showground, but carry on.
Yes, so tickets for the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair on Saturday the 2nd, Sunday the 3rd of December, available from our website, lincolnshireshowground.co.uk. Advance tickets also available from Uncle Henry's Farm Shop up near Kirton Lindsay and Pretty Little in the Bailgate.
No, don't look back. Interestingly enough, we've just had a call from our financial people saying that actually they're now okay. I say our financial people. We've got a specialist called Tony Blake from Take Five and also Senior Fraud Prevention Officer who's online. We've also got Natasha Armstrong online. How are you, Natasha?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex.
Would it be terribly rude if I actually said we'll come back to you in about 4 or 5 minutes from now?
That is not a problem.
Marvellous. Thank you for that, Natasha. That's all good stuff. And meanwhile, Sally, would you like to just share with us some of the other exciting things at the Lincolnshire Showground whilst we actually sort out this other little call that's coming through and move into that whole sequence? So again, just to flag up some of those highlights of this year's Lincoln Food and Gift Fair.
So, too many highlights to mention, really, but obviously our amazing exhibitors, over 150 food and gift exhibitors, our wonderful crafters up in Santa's Workshop, where there are lots of activities for the children, fantastic local Lincolnshire food producers and chefs, all demonstrating their festive tips in the Lincolnshire kitchen throughout the weekend, our wonderful community choirs who will be entertaining us, and obviously our visitors to the event. So, yeah, great.
Excellent.
Weekend.
And hopefully, all being well, we should now be able to connect with Senior Fraud Prevention Officer at the dedicated crime and card and payment crime unit. That would be Tony Blake. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Marvellous. You see, we knew we'd get there in the fullness of time. That's the important thing. Tony, talk to us about this line that actually, when it comes to taking action, there's a financial industry's coordinated response to helping consumers avoid fraud, because this does seem to be something which is, in Britain, sent £101.2 million to criminals after being tricked by transfer scams in the first 6 months of 2017. I mean, Sally, as an ordinary consumer, I just think those are frightening figures.
It's really quite scary. Yeah, very.
So, Tony, what's happening? How can we actually avoid it? And so on.
Okay, so we've sort of relaunched the Take Five campaign, Take Five to Stop Fraud, and we've got a line that says, "My money, my info, I don't think so." And that's really important. And we're talking about, you mentioned the sort of the transfer fraud there. And what that is where people are now being scammed into transferring money to what the fraudsters will call a safe account, but obviously you don't realise they're fraudsters. So they're purporting to be the bank, the police, or one of the large organisations that most of us deal with. They'll tell you there's some sort of problem with your account, or you need to make a payment, but you need to make that payment to this particular account. Now, it may be even someone you're dealing with. Another sort of classic one is you're buying a house, you need to pay some sort of deposit, and you'll get a spoof email from the solicitor, purporting to be your solicitor, using the same sort of wording that solicitor uses, and they'll ask you to make the payment to a particular account number and sort code, and you'll trust that, unfortunately, and you'll make that payment. So the message really, in relation to what the Take Five campaign is giving, is, always be sure about who you're talking to. Always be 100% certain. And the best way to do that is, if you're asked for personal information, you're asked for financial information, is get back to whoever's asking you to it on a recognised and genuine number that you're certain of. Not a number you're given, or a number you're given in an email or a reply to an email, but be 100% certain and double check. So if you're asked to make a payment to a business, even if you're fairly certain it's genuine, do you know what? It's good practice to pick up the phone, ring them and go, "I've had an email from you. Can I just confirm with you the account number and sort code that you're giving me is correct?" But make sure you're ringing on a number you know is 100% right for that business. And in fraudsters, when they pretend to be the bank, will tell you there's a problem with your account and you need to transfer all of your money out of the account. And of course, if you've got a significant amount of money in there, that can be very, very damaging, life-changing, and very sad. And there's been a lot of people, unfortunately, who've lost considerable amounts of money.
It seems to be a lot easier when people just claims to be Nigerian relatives who actually needed to have finance sent over to them via email. But I suppose, Tony, it's the level of sophistication that's rising. That, as you rightly said, if they're using apparently safe lines, solicitors and so on, and they're using skins which appear to be perfectly legit, it can be, Sally, it's relatively easy to fall for something with one of these ABCs.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's these sort of emails are getting more and more frequent, and I totally agree with what Tony says. You know, in terms of, you know, before you do anything, double check with who your actual solicitor is or whoever it may be, and double check the account details and things. But you can see how it wow. happens, and these fraudsters seem to be getting cleverer and cleverer.
Yeah, it's a constant battle. Tony, where's the best place to go to online to find out further details about the Take 5 package and indeed how you can actually protect yourself as best as possible against fraud online and otherwise?
Yeah, the website is www.take5-stopfraud.org.uk. There's loads of stuff on there. There's a quiz on there that you can sort of test your knowledge against. So some videos and just loads of stuff. So please visit the website and have a look.
And worth noting, of course, in terms of businesses, that on average they're losing £21,500 per case, which, given the kind of exhibitors at the Lincolnshire Showground, for instance, you think that's a substantial sort of whack in anybody's sort of pocket, really.
Absolutely.
So worth sorting through whichever way forward. Tony Blake, Senior Fraud Prevention Officer at the Dedicated Card and Payment Crime Unit, DCPCU. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
Something which you would never have at the Lincolnshire Food and Gift Fair, Disorder, Joy Division. Moving on, Natasha Armstrong's back with us. Yay, Natasha, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Alex.
Good. And the first thing you need to do is to say au revoir, farewell, so long, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye, to Sally Monday, who's done a fantastic job. You know, she managed to find her way to the Siren Studio. That deserves a Siren mug.
You've unbelievable. And not only have I got a Siren mug, I've got a Siren pen, yep, and I've got a Siren calendar for next year.
Exactly. So you see, Natasha's got her Siren calendar. She's going to take it to her place in Japan.
Wow.
Yes.
I'll take mine all the way to the Lincolnshire Showground.
Exactly.
That sounds far more grand.
It's a win-win situation, certainly, when it comes to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Over to yourself, Natasha. You've listened to some of the programme. Hopefully you've caught some of the bits of it. So have you got any final questions before you ask those last two ones to Sally about the... I mean, can we persuade you to make the journey from Nottingham, oh, I know it's such a long way away, to the Lincolnshire Showground for the Food and Gift Fair on the weekend of the 2nd and 3rd of December? Or indeed, you know, maybe join our press coverage that we'll do on the preview night on the 1st?
I would love to. Unfortunately, I'm down in Cornwall at the moment, and I won't be back from Cornwall at that point, but I would love to go. I would urge anyone listening to go. It is the most amazing fun, and the stall holders are all wonderful, and everything is just, yeah, it's just a great day out.
She was there last year, you see. So.
Yeah. She's great. She's amazing.
Doesn't just graduate a top honours qualification within journalism, but she's still on the Midweek Drive team. It's very good, very important for that. Okay, Natasha, as Sally prepares, as I say, to head off into the distance, would you like to put those last two questions to her for her participation in the programme today?
Certainly. Sally, have you enjoyed your time at the show today?
Of course I have, as ever. It's been great fun. Thank you.
Wonderful. And will we be hearing from you on the show anytime soon?
I certainly hope so.
Exactly. The location reports will be there and wondrous things will actually happen. I think it's probably one of the first shows we've just done on one-to-one basis.
Yes, it's when I eventually fought my way in here.
You can see survival of the fittest.
Absolutely.
You might see people looking lost, wandering around outside, going around looking at their compasses.
Absolutely. See how it works. Well, I'll send them your way, Alex. I don't want you to be lonely.
We're never lonely as long as we have a listener.
Indeed.
That's what I like to say at Siren Radio. Anyway, thank you for that, Sal. We will let you go now and head off into where the joys of the Lincolnshire Showground and more.
Thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing you very soon at the Food and Gift Fair.
Oh, it's just wonderful. Okay, Natasha, you've had a chance to actually peruse some of the programming, etc. Did you catch Richard Fitzwilliam's review of Thor Ragnarok?
No, that was the one part of the show I missed, and I'm gutted, because I'd love to know what he thought of it.
Well, of course, there is a podcast that will be available within the next 24 hours, all being well, to address that whole thing. So I won't give any spoilers out whatsoever. But suffice it to say, I did actually talk about Taras Bulba, which you will never have actually encountered, but it's well worth accessing just for the whole joy of Taras Bulba, really. And Yul Brynner and Tony Curtis, which is great stuff. Other sort of highlights, so we're talking about flu vaccinations. Is the Armstrong family one who actually says, yes, we always have our flu vaccinations, and no, we do not believe that it's going to give you the flu?
My grandparents generally tend to take the flu vaccination. My grandma sort of was sceptical for a number of years, and I think she's just kind of come around to it in the last year or so, and she started having it. But in terms of my parents and my sibling, we don't tend to have it. Tempting fate and all that.
Well, it is true. I mean, because obviously heading off to Japan, you'll need to have lots of shots and various other aspects, because that's what travellers have to do.
Yes, I've got to have a full medical before I go. As part of Japanese labour law, every year their employees of companies have to have a full medical, and normally that's paid for by the company. Obviously, this year it won't be paid for the company. I've got to done that myself, but I've got to go for a chest x-ray and have all of these tests just to make sure I'm not bringing some unknown virus into the country.
You could be Typhoid Mary, Typhoid Natasha. No, second.
I could. Clearly, new nickname for me.
It would be a different idea. You're heading, of course, to go with Bethan, who's working over there, and it's not a case of it's going to be a jolly. I mean, you probably have some fun times over there, but you will be teaching English, I believe.
Yes, I will. I will be teaching English to 1.5-year-olds up until adults. They have a gap. They get a gap in between at the age of from 11 to 18, because the education system in Japan gets a little bit crazy around then, and they won't have any free time, bless them. Oh. So they avoid having to sit in a room with me and have me teach them English.
It'll all work out splendidly, I'm sure. And, of course, the challenge is within the next, I'm not setting a particularly deadline here, but certainly within the next year, we want you to actually do some midweek drive idents in Japanese for us. Okay, so...
Wow, yeah. Okay.
Listening to the midweek drive, siren radio,
Bethan's
Japanese.
Bethan's more fluent than me, so you might have to...
Yeah, well, you know, either way, I'm not going to put you on the spot today, but I'm just rolling it out there as a little challenge that you actually sort of take.
I'll teach you guys some.
Yeah, exactly. Domo morigato, as I say. Hi. Such like stuff. Some great stuff there. Still to come, Louis Savvy will be talking about, hopefully, the experiment, which took place last weekend in London. We had excitement last night of For the Love of Sci-Fi, Manchester. Same weekend as the Lincoln Food and Gift Fair. Tough call. William Shatner, Dolph Lundgren and David Hasselhoff versus the Food and Gifts of Lincoln. I don't know. We might try and do both, but still, that's still to come. One's in Manchester, of course. One is in Lincoln. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link? Well, double telephonic link, obviously, having been kind enough to actually say, it's OK, I'll let the financial fraud expert go on, because clearly he needs to kind of get his message out there.
He had an important message, and I'd like to hope that if it saves some people some tricky times, then I'll let him go before me. It's not a problem.
Not so much saving lives as saving bank accounts. Very important.
Yes.
The whole sort of system. Marvellous. So has it been okay for you?
It's been very enjoyable. Thank you, Alex, as always.
And will you be back again in the near future, assuming the signal still works in Devon, wherever that happens to be?
I would love to. Absolutely love to. Thank you.
the screen. Slim, perfect creatures, and they're just 16. Their eyes meet, this is it. The contact's so much more than words can transmit. He stands up, she gives in. Their first encounter, their embrace within. A short ride, they arrive. There is no doubt that true love will survive. We are the Geisha Boys. Each other, but they also fight. Back from work, she's not home. Another evening, angry all alone. She arrives and he departs. Misunderstandings and a breakdown starts.
We are late tonight, we are regretting this. There is no easy way.
You can do. Choose either one of them, it could be you. The first time could be the only time. The odds against you and your hopes decline. Do it right or do it wrong. Console yourself that either won't last long. Geisha boys or temple girls, they contact or remain in separate worlds.
We are the Geisha boys.
Last night, of course, the chief executive officer and founder of ForTheLoveOfSciFi.com, Andrew Cleek, made his debut on the programme, looking ahead to December 2nd and 3rd event, which sees David Hasselhoff, William Shatner, Dolph Lundgren and Casper Van Dien in the same building. I know it's going to cause a singularity, but as we were speaking last week about the experiment, and as clearly we're bestest of best friends with the Ace Sci-Fi London folk, a big thank you to everyone who came, played and enjoyed the weekend at Experiment Leisure, Galaxy Ball, Team Earth, Bulldog Power Energy Drink, the Evil Core Game, the Double Me, the HowlRound Music, the Intelligencer M, Apocalypse Survival Training, Richard Sandling, Nate Crowley, author of the 100 Best Games That Never Existed, heaps and heaps of fantastically wonderful volunteers. I'm just doing the thank yous, Louis Savvy. That's all I can say, because clearly I'm mortified I was unable to get down to the experiment, Galaxy Ball, Team Earth and more. But it happened, it has been, and it will hopefully happen again.
Let's hope so. Yeah, fingers crossed it will. We'll do that again sometime October, November next year. And the film festival's coming up early May 2018. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah. We'll say that. Got to ask your views, actually, Louis. I'm not sure whether you make it as far north as Manchester, because obviously being in London, so I don't know. But that line, for the love of sci-fi, Shatner, Hasselhoff, Lundgren and Casper Van Dien, Starship Troopers, of course, that's borderline. You're nitro and glycerining to the max there, surely.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, as I mentioned last week, I'm hoping for a dance-off at some point.
Oh, yes.
I want to see that online. I want to see that. We did that actually at the festival one year with our quiz. We got through all of the
questions, had a draw. Then we went through all the tiebreakers. We did about six of those. And in the end, we made them dance it off. So,
well, we have thought
it's
about
the only way to solve a problem, yeah. You know.
Well, Andrew did admit to us yesterday, of course, that he is seriously working on getting William Shatner to reprise his Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds recitation.
Fantastic.
You know, I mean, if you're talking levels of cultural genius which transcend centuries, you know, that's
exactly
going on.
Exactly. Well, I mean, without being too political, but if you wanted to do anything about, as Trump called him, Little Rocket Man, then Shatner may be the secret weapon we have. Send him in.
Precisely. You know, where's Captain Kirk? He's saving
exactly.
the Earth again.
He's
you know?
Singing Rocket Man on the border between North and South Korea.
Yeah. Yeah. These are the kind of messages that other radio stations can only dream of, Louis, frankly.
Exactly.
We like to push it a stage further. So is it a case of you relax now? Foolish question, because obviously you're planning ahead to Sci-Fi London. What does the savvy household have in store as we kind of reflect on the fantastic nature of the experiment? Well, it was, and it is, and it's worked and so on. And
we had a great weekend.
Was there anybody I missed out in the thank you thing there? Because I tried to give most of the folk in terms of folk who are actually there, but obviously...
There were a lot of people around. Richard Sandling was there with Rob Deb, and a couple of other comedians that were doing some great stand-ups, very geeky. We also had another game which was launching, as well as Evil Core. We had a really cool zombie deck-building game called Last One In. And I think they're about to launch their Kickstarter within the next couple of weeks. So we'll have stuff on both those games as they go live on our website. But it went down really well. Everybody loved it. They really, you know, people were really hooked when they were playing it. It was good. It was jolly good fun. So, big pleasure. And thank you to everyone who came.
Yeah, absolutely. And news from Phil Lynn's front. You may recall last week, I feel as though I was doing the opening credits to Lost in Space here. Last week, as you may recall, we left our intrepid travellers with Danger, Will Robinson. It's on the Horror Channel, 8 o'clock this evening. And again, it follows Star Trek Voyager. Many people would actually say that's just Lost in Space with a different kind of robot, hologram. But moving on from there, Phil Lynn actually is back to peak fitness again. He had been very poorly, and that was the reason we lost touch with him on the Wednesdays. He was back on Full Force yesterday. And the great news is he should be with us in Britain in March next year with Dean Haglund for about a week.
Fantastic.
So I'm sure he'll have you on his list. I think it's Manchester, something there, Lincoln's there. So it's looking quite healthy. So all we need is Alana Rain, and it'll be like a reunion.
Exactly.
All sorts of ways. In fact, funny enough, I've actually just been prompted via social media to actually like this giant papier-mâché boulder. It's actually quite heavy, which I hadn't realised I hadn't liked, but I have just done that to actually add it up a bit more from a New Zealand director who I must admit you were kind enough to introduce me to. And we need to feature a girl because that not only did it win tremendous accolades at the Sci-Fi London Film Festival last year, it went on, of course, to win the Starburst Film of the Year as well from the independent thing. So
yeah, it's a fabulous movie. I don't know whether it's available here yet on iTunes or any of the download services, but as soon as you get a chance to see it, and any Doctor Who fans, Blake Seven fans, and we'll just love it. It's just full of references and a really, really enjoyable movie. Really enjoyable.
It's like Vasquez Rocks comes to life and bites you in various other lovely places. It's just great stuff. So looking ahead, do we actually have the dates for Sci-Fi London 2018?
We don't officially have them yet, but it will be more than likely the first week of May. That's where we're working towards them. And we've got meetings next week. We're going to be sitting down and planning all of that stuff. It's the 18th festival, so we're able to have alcohol now. And it's also the 10th anniversary of the 48-hour film challenge next year.
Is Gareth returning?
I don't know if he'll take part in it.
He should. He should enter. Just see if he's lost it all over the years.
Exactly.
You know, all that stuff with Star Wars, Godzilla. You know, it's all right. You know, get it sorted out, Gareth. Yeah, get the 48-hour film challenge. Keep it real.
I wonder if he'd be able to do a 5-minute film now with just three people. So.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's rather like after the Beatles had broken up, Paul McCartney specifically took Wings on the Road to small clubs, to small routines, to quote get in touch with his roots again. You should have that for film directors.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I don't think he's never really lost his roots. Because I do know, and I can share this with the world now, I think, that Gareth has attended many a convention over the last few years, especially, you know, things like MCM Expo and so on. But no one will ever know he's there because he goes in a Stormtrooper outfit. Very sneaky. So he's still down with the kids, as it were.
He could have actually been at Wednesday's Future 2.0 festival, in which we had over 2,000 school children who were engaging in virtual reality pursuits and creative Star Wars stuff at the University of Lincoln.
Yep, absolutely. You never know. Exactly. You never know. Until they take their bucket off, you don't know who's inside that.
So
you know,
true. So. Let's give a plug that you've shared for further details. As you said, long-time friend and supporter of the festival is looking for your expertise. This is Jobida Ali, who's around.
Jobida.
Thank you. Yes. Pronunciation, English, tomato, Jobida. There we are. Jobida Ali.
Banana, exactly.
Please, would you like to? Funnily enough, I was actually thinking about a concrete banana earlier today, but for no reason. I just thought it would be an interesting line. Maybe it's all the construction work that's going on. Would you like to share on air now, so it's a double whammy for the Siren Radio listeners in Lincoln and globally via our podcasts, why Jobida is actually looking for a TEDx host?
Oh, she's going to be setting up a TEDx event next March, I think, in London. And while she's done stuff with TED before, apparently to get the official recognition, you need a TED speaker, a full, you know, TED fellow,
right,
to endorse or license you. So, so she put a call out just saying, is there anyone that any of us know that can be put in touch with her so that they can get that all over? She's done it before, in fact, but she just needs to have someone on board, who's in the country where the TEDx event will take place.
And the theme is robotics, AI, and the age of automation.
Absolutely, absolutely. She's got, and of course now I can't remember the name, but she has a company that she set up, which is building care robots. You know, if you have a disabled relative or whatever and you need someone that, you know, a robot in the house, a bit like Robot and Frank, I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, again, Langella. Wonderful, yes.
So they're actually doing it for real. They've got you know, very good funding, and they're really doing some cutting edge research on all that sort of stuff. So she's really into her robotics and the future of how robotics will not be Skynet and Terminator, but will actually be, you know, useful companions to us.
No disassemble. No disassemble. Number five is alive.
Exactly.
I won't go into my Wall-E scenario because that is too much.
Too early.
Yeah, far too early. And there's lots of good stuff happening on Siren Radio as the day actually proceeds. People can obviously keep up with the Sci-Fi London Film Festival at Sci-Fi London. Presumably is a Twitter handle.
Yep, it's sci-fi-london.com for the website. Yep. And look out on the 1st of December when we're going to launch our advent calendar, Sci-Fi London advent calendar.
Hey, I mean,
So there'll be some goodness every day.
Once again, you see, this is just that cherry on the top of the whole piece. The 1st of December, the day of the preparation, the eve of sci-fi. For the love of sci-fi in Manchester.
For the love of sci-fi.
It's awesome stuff. Louis, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link in this post-experiment contribution? On the Midweek Drive.
As always, yeah.
So I take it, you'll be up for joining us again in the very near future as we build up to that Advent calendar launch.
Indeed, and we'll keep you posted on the 48-hour and the festival dates as soon as we've confirmed them.
Would be wonderful. Well, we say our thanks now to Sally Mundy from the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, of course, William Coles in Edinburgh, Leila Hanbeck, the Chief Pharmacist of the National Pharmacy Association, who has now officially said that actually washing your hair and going out in the cold is not necessarily going to make you ill. I don't know. And also, the bigger you are, the more medicine you need. Not true. A couple of urban myths we actually managed to scotch in the programme today, Louis, just in case you're wondering.
Marvellous.
Also, Maiten Myerscough, who had some fairly innovative recycling news. Natasha Armstrong, of course, from Nottingham before she heads off to Japan. Tony Blake, Senior Fraud Prevention Officer at the dedicated Card and Payment Crime Unit. It's been a packed show, as you can hear, Louis. But we finished, as ever, with the cherry on the top of your good self. And, that's wrong. I think I'll have to rewrite that script, really, because that's not going to happen. Particularly if we've got Rita Ora coming up after 30 Seconds to Mars, then the news, then the Siren News tape. It's all go. Would you like to wrap up by saying those immortal words? Sci-fi London, keep watching the skies. A one, a two, a three.
Sci-fi
London, keep watching
the skies.